Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schrankler and Carl Carlson's awake on an early Monday morning to chat with us. Hey, Carl.
Although
it's not that early there, you're on the East Coast, so I'm still in my first cup of coffee.
I'm about ready for lunch.
All right. Now, before we got started, we both have got potential noise sources in our backgrounds. I think you have contractors working on the house and painting, and they're due here at any moment, not for painting, but hopefully not starting with a jackhammer.
And a couple of grandkids running around, and we'll see if they can stay quiet for the podcast.
Okay. Well, we'll do the best we can. It is summertime when we're recording this, so lots of stuff's happening. So as it goes.
Yep.
Now, I'm trying to think, Carl, when's the last time that you and I talked, actually? It's been a little while, I think.
Well, we talked last week on our book, but then recording was a couple weeks ago. So it's been a little while.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, in the discussion, by the time this comes out, it'll be late September, I believe. Hopefully, Carl will be done drafting the book, which has been a process in and of itself, is getting the outline through and what do we need to do, and the feedback we've been getting from people reviewing the chapters that are online now has been great, and I expect that to continue. The part that's interesting, though, is that it taps into a completely different part of what we do normally, right? We're engineers first. And we go out and solve problems. We work with clients to help them set up systems or optimize the system or discover failure mechanisms, all those kinds of things. But writing is completely a different area that you have to tap into.
Absolutely. The engineers, and myself included, you know, first and foremost, we approach problems methodically and structured, and really we think inside the box. A lot of us, I know I do. I see that box and I'm looking at it and I'm seeing it. And I have to work at thinking outside the box. It doesn't come naturally to me. It is starting to get better and better. I mean, I've really worked at it. But a lot of engineers tend to see things in a structured way, and that's very good. That's what I'll call convergent thinking. Mm-hmm. Where you had a set of facts and ideas and known information, and then you drill down and find, quote, the answer, unquote, which is very different from creativity, where you have some type of, I'll call it divergent thinking, where you have some stimulus and you brainstorm new ideas, and spontaneity is important, and novel approaches. So different approaches.
It is. Well, you've been in brainstorm sessions. You know, you have a field problem. And so I have to disagree a little bit about the methodical part. Is you have a problem, a customer calls and says, this is broken. You don't even have the part back. You put a team together real quick and you say, here's the issue. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. And oftentimes it starts with a brainstorm. Just what could it be? What could be going wrong? How could we figure this out? And there's always one engineer that goes, oh, this is a waste of time. I know exactly what it is. We have to do X. And they've already solved it. They leapt way ahead of everybody else, not even able to explain the logic, but they go, I know what it is. And they leap to the solution right away. And I find that as a barrier. I think two things are to the creativity part and is the, you know, I already know the solution. You know, this is the same as in 1987. We did this and this and this and it solved it. Like, no, are you sure? And then the other one is that, well, we need to make this a PhD study and make sure everything's covered. And program managers battle engineers all the time. Come on, guys, we have to ship it. You're done optimizing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I remember one of my first encounters on this was back in the 1980s, where I worked in a test lab, a reliability lab in the early 1980s. And the concept there was you could, I remember it very clearly, they're talking to me about this. You're going to achieve reliability, high reliability, or you're going to add cost, or you're going to add time to the product. So you have timing, you have reliability, quality, you have cost. You're going to get two of those three. It was told to me over and over, you're not going to get all three. Mm-hmm. And that probably is some logical algorithm that people have come up with over the years. It's not true. And so it took some creativity to realign reliability approaches in the early 80s. I mean, not everybody was doing design for reliability in the early 80s. It took a realignment and a creative approach, stepping back and saying, well, wait a minute, how do you get all three? Well, the only way to achieve all three is to design for reliability, to step back and not just do the things we've always done, to look for different approaches, to open up your mind to new possibilities, and to approach that in the design. Then you could design something that's reliable, low cost, and fast to market.
Fast to market and feature rich too. I mean, you can throw all that in there. In it reminds me of a quote. I had drawn a complete blank of who said it, but it was something along the lines of, you need to be open-minded, but not so open-minded that your brain falls out. And part of this creativity as a reliability person is, I mean, it's true for any engineering discipline, is that we're faced with problems or challenges and a set of constraints, and there's literally an infinite number of solutions, right? And which ones meets the criteria and optimizes for whether it's customer satisfaction or profitability or both or something like that. That takes a different way of thinking. And you've talked about divergent thinking. It's funny. I remember in, it was a diversity class, I think it was, but it was different personality traits. And some people are just more creative than others. And, you know, I never bought that. I never believed that you had to get a creative person on your team, an extrovert on your team, an introvert on your team, you know, these different types of people.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I think you can be creative and then in divergent thinking, and then you can change. You can go to the next meeting and be more convergent thinking and sorting out and optimizing. It's a different task. It's just different muscles we use in our brains, basically, to do those two different things.
I completely agree. In fact, ideally, an engineer would use both divergent thinking and convergent thinking as skills and be able to shift back and forth at the right times. Mm-hmm. But some things you have to work at more than others. In other words, maybe your default is convergent, and you have to explore and practice divergent. Or conversely, maybe your default is divergent, and you have to explore and increase your skills on convergent. It's good to have both.
It is. And, you know, I saw a study just, it's another one where it's, I guess, Carl, I'm not into my second cup of coffee yet, so it's the memory's not kicking in. There was a study I read about just recently about education, in that they did a big study about the capability, the prowess of men and women in math and science. And they were trying to figure out if there's something that explains the just the male dominance in the sciences fields, and trying to get more women into the field and so on. And I'm sure you've heard of the statement, well, young girls or young women coming through school at some point go, well, I'm not good at that. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And what the study found was that, women are actually better at math and science in the core of it. It's a matter of believing they are. And, you know, and they, and part of it was, is that it is, if you don't exercise that area, if you don't take those classes, if you don't do the homework, if you don't work at it, yes, you're not as good at it. Yes, it is more difficult. And I think this, the analogy is the same with creativity. Is there's plenty of folks that come along and they say, well, I suck at art. I don't like artistic stuff. I'm not good at coming up with new ideas. I think the challenge there is that if you think you are, you're right. You know, yes. if you think you can't do it, you're right. Takes exercise. But if what happens is over time, it becomes something that is difficult because you're just not practiced at it. It's like exercise, right? If you're running all the time and then you get on a bicycle, or you, Carl, you do kayaking, right? If the first mm-hmm. time you get in the boat in the season, those arms are sore.
Exactly.
You know,
it does take exercise. I don't think someone is born with creativity. I don't think I do believe, like you do, that it can be learned. You have to work at it. In your description of the young women who self-limit, if they do, that reminds me of Pygmalion, you know, the Greek mythological figure, mm-hmm. and the play My Fair Lady, and what's called the Pygmalion principle, which That's is right. how you treat someone, how you your expectations for them have a lot to do with how they turn out. And if you believe in them, and if you're raising children, or if you have relationships with people, or a team leader with a team, mm-hmm. if you believe in the team, if you believe that people can create and have great ideas and can come up with solutions, if you believe there are solutions to problems, that belief is very powerful and comes across and opens up a lot of possibilities. If you believe something can't be done, I would call that a reverse Pygmalion. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the people that you're working with are less likely to be able to come up with solutions. If the team leader or the authority figure believes something can't occur. So powerful principles we're talking about.
It is. Now getting into just creativity in general, I know in my work experience, I was in a group that every year we would do this kind of elaborate brainstorming to come up with project proposals to, and basically we were a consulting group and we had to pitch ideas or trends that would help our clients, which were internal HP divisions, recognize they needed that. So we had to be a little bit ahead of our clients in some cases. Sometimes they came straight to us and said, hey, we need this solved. But oftentimes we went and pitched our own ideas, but we had to come up with ideas of which to evaluate and that divergent thinking part. And there were 50 engineers, highly skilled PhDs and very experienced engineers and all kinds of different disciplines. And there's really only two of us that, myself included, because I enjoyed doing that brainstorming thing, coming up with ideas, came up with, I think out of the 500 ideas 1 year, Helen and I came up with 450 of them.
Right.
And our management was like, come up as many as you can. You know, we have there's an award for first and second place for the most ideas. Maybe we got off to a good start and discouraged everybody else. But it was like that year after year. Most people would do one or two with little hope that it would get picked or go through, because it was a pretty rigorous process. And then it had to be accepted by clients. But you're right, the management part plays a role in it. But it's also, we talked about it a couple times now, is that training part, that you can do it. And as we're writing this book and going through, you know, Carl, to be honest with you, is the editing part is the part I need more exercise on.
Okay.
I'm getting the writing part down now, but it's the editing part I need more exercise. How did you develop your creativity muscle? How do you teach other people to do that?
I learned about it years ago in the 1980s by joining a group called Odyssey of the Mind.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's an offshoot. It's a subgroup that was underneath NASA originally, mm-hmm. and the It's basically creativity projects for kids, and it's very much a balance of science and artistic. Mm-hmm. And the kids adopt projects that take the better part of a year. And the big rule is no adult can have an input to the project, mm-hmm. The solution of the project. And so I got involved in that. I had my kids involved in it, and we did projects. And then I became what's called a judge, where you judge the competition.
Right.
And then I did head judge for state of Arizona for 9 years, and got really involved in that whole concept. And I found that children are extremely creative. If you don't stifle them, and if you don't tell them things can't be done, they come up with incredible ideas.
Right.
And it's oftentimes the adult influence that's negative to them. And as judges, we're able to discern if the idea is purely from the child or if they've had influences or not. A lot of fun. So that piqued my interest. And then the other thing that happened with me is in writing the first book, Effective FMEAs, I have a whole subchapter on creativity. So I researched, I'm looking at them right now, but 9 books on creativity, just to immerse myself in different approaches on how people develop that. So part of my exercise was studying the literature that's been published on the subject of creativity. And there's a great amount of it that's in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. There is. And it's, and I'm going to bring this back to reliability a bit. You mentioned that you have a section in on the FMEA part. Now, I'm imagining, if I remember, I did read your book, Carl, that it's related to that brainstorm sections where, well, what could the causes be or what could go wrong? There's a number of places where we brainstorm.
Yes. Sim,
or in more organized is we do a fault tree analysis, essentially, right? What could be causing this problem? There's lots of ways it could go. Yep. I've often described FMEA as an organized brainstorm, but is that what you're getting at? Is to do that divergent thinking steps in the FMEA process?
Yes, that's within the FMEA process. You can use the same steps in any root cause analysis or essentially any reliability tool. But it's important, Fred, to if you're working with a team or even if you're on your own, to know when to start brainstorming and when to stop it. We don't want to brainstorm all the time because brainstorming says you don't evaluate.
Right.
You defer judgment. And so the brainstorming process just gets this gush of ideas and creativity going forward. 95% of it can be completely unuseful. But that 5% is incredibly important.
That's
so
right.
You want to get the flow going. You don't want to judge. You don't want to stop the flow in any way. So it can be silly ideas. So I like to start brainstorming and then stop brainstorming and then evaluate the ideas that have occurred. But I don't want to always be in the brainstorming mode.
Right.
So I basically have 2 modes, brainstorm on, brainstorm off.
Well, I mean, we mentioned FMEA and fault tree analysis, root cause analysis, which are processes that we tap into every now and then, but they all include this divergent thinking piece to it. Any engineering discipline has, once you understand what the problem is, which sometimes takes some work, simple question that we all face is, well, how is the customer going to use this? What's the day in the life of this product and what's the environment around it? That starts to tap into our experience, but then it's, well, what else could happen? What if it's not balanced? What if it's not this? What if it's a lot of what if type questions?
Yeah, yeah. And when you begin to think about those things, those ideas are vulnerable to criticism. And so very often people who are a little bit afraid of being criticized, understandably, it's not pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
They won't bring up ideas that they haven't thought through for fear of being criticized. And so the whole idea there, and I use this in relationships or when I'm talking with people, I say, let me just brainstorm with you for a minute. And then I'll say some things that haven't thought through totally that we think through together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just a wonderful way to explore ideas without the fear of criticism.
Well, I've heard it expressed as you need a safe environment. So it taps into something you said earlier about if the team lead is connecting it to, it makes it an acceptable practice to create ideas and that you're being creative in it, then you'll get that. But I think also is that there are some people, I agree, that are, this is half-baked. I don't want to be judged for that. And it can be very unconsciously done, too.
Yeah, self-censor.
Yeah, you need to make it very, well, you've seen it. You go around the room, and there might be six people there, and two of them are just rattling off ideas. And the other four are cowed by that, basically.
Yeah,
You know,
so it's the team leader has a really important job to create that balance to where it's acceptable and okay. And conversely, Fred, I wouldn't want to leave the listeners with the idea that we aren't very critical. Once you've done brainstorming, I love differences of opinion, debate. I disagree with you, things like that. Let's be very strong on our opinions and evaluation. And so that's why I like to separate the creativity of ideas from the almost the harsher reality of evaluation.
That's right. And the creativity part, though, I'm going to come back to your 9 books, Carl, is that we've touched on a number of different parts of this process and how important it is. It fits into so many places in reliability. The team lead or the person organizing this needs, with more than one person, needs to create a safe environment so that ideas can come forward and not be judged until later when it's, and still there, it needs to be not personal attacks. It needs to be what your opinion is based on the merits of the idea and what do you know and don't know.
Absolutely.
But I'm going to expand it a little bit, Carl, is that we do creativity type activities when we're making a reliability plan. These are the set of steps we expect are going to help us solve problems. It's a creative structure. When we're problem solving or doing root cause analysis, when we're looking for funding, you can get real creative sometimes and have to many times to, I've got 87 samples, but my chamber only holds 60. How do I get the objective done? And sometimes that creativity spark has to play a role there and tap into people that can help you bring that creativity out and solve those problems.
Absolutely.
It's in so many areas,
Yeah. It really is I finish a class with people towards the end, I say, well, let's anticipate some things that could be roadblocks to implementing what you've learned. Mm-hmm. And so people will, creatively, they'll think, well, this could happen. How do we deal with that? How do we deal with that? How do we deal with that? That creativity. One other point I'd just like to bring in is that sometimes the way to become creative or to come up with ideas is being willing to be silent for a little while. If our minds are constantly filled with noise and think, sometimes you don't get that really good idea. So I try to quiet the mind every once in a while and just be open to ideas coming in and as part of the process.
Well, I've heard the phrase, you are what you eat, right? If you eat healthy food, you're generally going to be healthier. The idea is the same with your brain. If you read, if you explore art and theater or go to a play or you read a good book or you watch a TED talk or there's so many venues that we have that are outside of our day-to-day business. Although as much as I love reading books on FMEA, I do read other things.
Same here.
Right. So I think there is a notion of this quiet your mind. There's a book called The Artist Way. It's old now. It's probably 20 years old. It's The Artist Way at Work. And it was by Mark Bryan and with Julie Cameron and Catherine Allen. I'm looking at the cover right now. And one of its core exercises is that the first thing in the morning, you free write, which just means write stream of conscious. Just you got 20 minutes, write 3 pages longhand, which is sometimes it would just flow and I couldn't stop the pen. And other times it would be 20 minutes. Am I done yet? Am I done yet? But give it a practice. First thing in the morning, just write. You don't need to read it again. It's just dump. And it's an exercise of actually clearing your mind. It gets rid of all. Sometimes my list was just a to-do list, right? I had all this stuff. I just get it on paper. And then it made me more aware throughout the rest of the day. I could respond to inputs. I could anticipate needs. I could be more creative in general by doing that simple practice every day.
Very good.
You know, some people it's meditation. Some people it's go for a walk. You know, turn off your phone and go for a walk kind of thing. But there are other practices. And what you mentioned you had a stack of 9 books on there. Do you have one that you would recommend?
Yeah, why? I do have one that I've really enjoyed a lot. It's called How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. The subtitle is 7 Steps to Genius Every Day by Michael Gelb. And I found that the more I can think like Leonardo da Vinci, the better off I am.
Well, I think all of us would be to some extent. it does take practice. One of the classes I took when I was with this group at HP was drawing. And I looked at my boss and like, you want me to take a class on drawing? And it was, what? Yeah, you know, we use a whiteboard all the time or, you know, chart paper or whatever. We take down notes. We express ideas. We capture meeting minutes and stuff like that. Being able to quickly put together images is a skill that can help you communicate. And I want you to be a good communicator. And, oh, okay, I'll go give it a try.
Insightful boss.
Yeah, I couldn't draw a straight line without a ruler to save my life. You know, it's like my music talent. I could carry a tune as long as it's on a portable radio. but with practice, you get more confidence with it. And I think the same is true with creativity, is give it a try and practice. And practice in a journal, practice on your own, practice in other areas than your engineering, and then bring it in. Little by little, you'll get better at it.
Sounds really good. And don't be afraid of criticism.
It will come.
Yes.
That might be a topic for another discussion, is how to deal with it. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, Carl, I think we could probably talk about creativity in great detail on and on. So let's ask our audience if, you know, this is a little departure from what we normally talk about on Speaking of Reliability. We've gone all kinds of different topics, from details on halt testing to FMEAs to reliability project management and on, all kinds of cool topics. Creativity really does play a major role in what we do. And if this strikes a chord with you, if you'd like to learn more about that, you know, if you've got questions, let us know. Head over to reliability.fm and you can find the Speaking of Reliability show and leave us a comment or send us a question. We'd love to hear from you as to what you think about this idea as a string of topics we could talk about, or how it works best in your life. You know, what's working for you, or what's a good reference that you'd like to share? Those kinds of things. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, Carl, I think we actually made it through the gauntlet of contractors and noise-producing grandkids and everything else.
We did.
So you must have had a creative solution. Send them out for ice cream or something?
Yeah, they're all taking a walk, and the contractor's working on the back of the house.
All right. Well, that works. All right. Well, thanks for bringing up the idea, Carl. I think it's a great topic.
Thank you, Fred.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.